Good morning. Welcome to the Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. Hope you all had a good week. Winter is upon us. My name is Jim Hansen. I'm your board rep this morning. And we have a variety of announcements about church life and activities, so please read the announcements listed in your order of service and be sure to take it home with you and read them if you care to. In addition, we have a few announcements up here today. The monthly food pantry collection is today. The Social Action Committee is starting a new procedure for the food pantry collection. So instead of a separate collection, we will collect the money donations during our regular weekly offertory. And food contributions can be placed in baskets in the foyer labeled food pantry. These changes will streamline the process and allow our children to get to RE classes a little sooner. This month's collection is for the Oconomowoc Food Pantry, and loose cash donations will also go to the food pantry. Checks can be made out to LCUUC in amounts for the food pantry and just noted on the memo line or on the envelope. There are still a few tags on our giving tree in the foyer, so if you'd like to join us in brightening the holidays for those at the Hebron House, please take a tag and bring the unwrapped gifts back to the church by December 19th. And if you haven't taken home one yet, there's a guest at our table box or boxes out in the hallway too, and the money raised goes to advance human rights work for the UU Service Committee. And you can learn about their work by reading the stories attached to the boxes. The boxes are also due back on December 19th. And if you ordered any, the Suic fruits and nuts are in. They're in the front hall with name tags on the bags or boxes. Would you like to do it right now? All right, and we have another announcement.
Sorry, we were going to make a note of it, but we've got our congregational meeting today at 11:30. This is to vote on the solar initiative and the refinance for the church. So please stick around. We'll do that as quickly as we can, starting at 11:30.
Thank you, Greg. And I invite you to greet those sitting around you. Hey. And it's here. That's cool. All right.
Good morning.
Okay, if you are visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger at the visitor's table in the foyer, and there's a variety of information available on that table out there about our church and Unitarian Universalism, so help yourself to anything that interests you. I'll be in the social hall after the service, and I'll be at the meeting. So if you have any questions about our church, or if you've been visiting for a while and would like information on becoming a member, be happy to talk to you about that as well. If you're visiting with your children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the offertory, at which time they'll go to their religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you would like to go along to observe your child's class, please do so. The nursery is just out the doors to my right and across the hallway. If there's a need for childcare during the service, classes will end at 11:15, at which time you can pick up your children from their classes. We always enjoy getting to know our guests, so if any members have brought guests with them, we'd be pleased if you would introduce them, and if any guests have brought themselves and are comfortable doing so, now would be a good time to introduce yourself. Okay. Everyone's invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. It's a good place to gather for further discussion of our service. Please put your cell phones on silence during the service, and I hope you find this morning's service inspiring. Our speaker today was to be our own Reverend Jane, but she got stuck in Sweden due to some weather problems and airport closing, so we'll be kind of a lay-led service today. Another announcement about Jane is she's decided to get married tomorrow. Kind of moved it up since she's going to be there for a little while. So it might be nice if anyone or everyone would send her an email with congratulations. And it might be nice to send it out tonight because there's a 7-hour time difference. So with that, I think I'll turn it over to someone else.
And our opening words, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven, Genesis 28.
Please join us now in singing our chalice lighting hymn listed in your order of service. All of the children and willing adults to join us to the front for the story of all ages.
Good morning. Diane, would you care to turn some pages for me? You'd like to be. Good morning. Wait. The Trees of the Dancing Goats. Our story this morning is called The Trees of the Dancing Goats. One more. At our farm outside Union City, Michigan, we didn't celebrate the same holidays as most of our neighbors, but we shared their delight and anticipation of them just the same. Such cold the winter brings, my babushka said as she looked out the front window. And I'm thinking babushka is what she calls her grandma. You watch the snow with such light in your eyes, grandpa said to her. My grandparents were from Russia and they had wonderful accents, which I don't do so well, so I won't do accents here today. It always just sounds like German. They kept their homelands in their hearts, even though they would never be permitted to return. Just then Mama came home. She was a school teacher. But now she would be off for 2 weeks for the holiday season. I loved having her home for winter vacation. This year we would have a week together to prepare, then 8 days of Hanukkah festivities. The next day, Mama took out our old tarnished menorah and asked me to polish it. While I rubbed, I watched my grandmother make candles that we would put in it. She tied long strings to a metal rod and dipped them into a pot of melted beeswax that she kept on the stove. Grandpa prepared for our festival of lights as well. He carved small toys out of wood. My brother and I weren't supposed to know that he was making them for us, but he did every year. And that afternoon, when he went into town, we snuck into his workshop to take a peek. "Look, a dancing goat," my brother exclaimed as he held up one. Grandpa had painted the animals with colors from his homeland. We marveled at how magical they were. My mother asked me to go to our neighbors, the Kremels, for some cornmeal. We were farmers, and the Kremels were our nearest neighbors, about a half mile down the road. Mr. Kremel always helped Grandpa. All the neighbors helped each other that way. "Friendship means something," Grandpa always said, "especially for those who till the soil." Cherry Kremel was my best friend. I loved to watch her family decorate their Christmas tree, and she loved to watch my family light our menorah. But when I got to their house, I found everybody quite sick. They hadn't even been able to put up their Christmas tree. They all had terrible coughs. I ran home and told my family the news about Cherry and her family. Mama was very worried. Many families around us had come down with scarlet fever. "It is very contagious. We are going to have to keep a close watch on you," she said. As the days passed, it was clear that I was not getting sick. But we heard more and more reports of neighbors falling ill. It was an epidemic. We were worried about our families, but Babushka was determined that our festival of lights would go on as planned. We made potato latkes and roasted two chickens. Just as the aroma of our wonderful feast met our nostrils, the sun set, and it was time to light the menorah. Grandpa recited the blessings, and Babushka lit the first candle in the menorah. Then Mama told the story, as she did every year, of our people long ago. "Tonight we are celebrating miracles," she said. "The miracle is that a very small band of Jewish farmers turned soldiers could defeat a huge Syrian army. Simple farmers, just like us, were fighting so that they could worship in their own way." "Then there was the miracle of the light," my grandfather said, with a twinkle in his eye. "One little drop of oil burned in the temple for 8 days. "Such a miracle," my babushka exclaimed. "Miracles can happen even today," Grandpa said quietly. After dinner, Grandpa gave us some of our beautifully wrapped animals. He looked troubled, though. "You know, our neighbors are having such a hard time, and this should be a time of gladness for them. If only there was something we could do to make their holiday special." Babushka thought for a while. "They always bring a tree into their house. We should cut down trees and take them to their houses," Grandpa announced. "And we can take them food," said Babushka as she scurried into the kitchen. "Mama and I can decorate the trees," I shouted excitedly. "We can use the carvings that Grandpa made." Page. Grandpa and Richard cut down trees and nailed boards onto the bottom so each would stand up on its own. Then we hung some of the wooden animals on the branches of the trees. "A dancing goat," Babushka remarked. "We shall call these the trees of the dancing goats, and we put a dancing goat on each tree." We worked all night to decorate the trees. Babushka and Mama roasted more chickens and fried more potato latkes. They packed the food in baskets and put one of Babushka's homemade Hanukkah candles in each one so they will have the light of God in their hearts and so that God will provide for them and make them well again, she murmured. We loaded the trees and food baskets into the car and sent Babushka and Grandpa into the early light of dawn with their Christmas cheer. We waited eagerly for their return. We thrilled to hear how they entered each home and set up a tree and put a basket of food on the table and put a candle in the holder for them to light later. A week later, the 8 days of Hanukkah had come and gone, and we sat down to have our feast. There was a knock at the door. It was the Kremels. They looked pale, but assured us they were quite well now. "We have something for you," Cherry announced as she bolted through the door holding a basket. Her mother and father had tears in their eyes as they hugged my grandparents and my mother. "Look what my dad made for you," Cherry said. She pulled out a menorah that Mr. Kremel had carved out of wood. On it, he had mounted some of the animals that we had given them. "How beautiful," my babushka said as she placed it on the table. They sat down and shared our feast. By that time, our menorah had been lit for a while, and when we lit the candles in the new menorah, we noticed something wondrous. "Look," I called out. "All our candles are exactly as tall as the new ones." "Another miracle," Grandpa said. "A miracle indeed," my babushka said, giving me a big hug. Then we all got up and danced and laughed together in the flickering candlelight. Our neighbors all recovered from the fever, and what they were left with was a long-cherished memory of that Christmas when Santa really did come. And my family has never forgotten the incredible winter of the fever, the miracle of true friendship, and the trees of the dancing goats. The end.
We now welcome you to join us in singing hymn number 41. Please stand as you are willing and able. We now welcome our offertory. If you are a guest today, we ask that you feel no obligation and that you are our guest. Please note in the order of service how the collection will be handled today. Now is the time in our service where we welcome you to share your joys and concerns. If you have a joy or concern you'd like to share, please raise your hand and an usher will bring a microphone to you. State your name and your joy or concern, and we will light a candle for you. I'll begin by lighting our first candle, as always, in memory of all the conflict and strife that goes on in our world, and hopefully there'll be some peaceful resolutions to that.
I'm Diane, and I hope you all received the open mic email from Betsy Foss Campbell about that we have opened overflow shelter for the homeless men, and I'm just so thrilled about this. So I guess that's all I have to say. I had one important message that I'm going to be emailing you. I'm sorry, but there's not enough time to go into it now. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Bev, and I'd like you to light a candle of concern for my sister who fell yesterday and landed on her face and broke some bones in her face and is awaiting evaluation by a specialist surgeon. And I guess it's very painful.
Hi, I'm John. Would you please light a candle for Judy Isles and her family and keep them in your thoughts today?
I'm Sue, and light a candle for, well, most recently, for Bjorn's birthday. He just turned 11, but also we're wrapping up 2 weeks of birthdays, so for our whole family.
Hi, I'm Julie. I'd like to light a candle of both joy and concern for Jean.
Hi, I'm Kathy. I have a candle of joy and concern. Joy that we are moving my mother-in-law into assisted living this week. It's been a long time coming. Concern that she's going to be frustrated at giving up some independence.
My name is Chris. Would you light a candle concern? My little grandson's, Tyler, he's 10, his best buddy was just diagnosed with leukemia. We were really worried all week, but it's looking a little more optimistic than we originally thought.
Hi, my name is Erin, and if you could light a candle of concern and keep your thoughts and energy or prayers for the family of Neil Wolf, who was a friend of ours in Nebraska, who passed away last week by taking his own life. Then a candle of concern for me. I'm going to be going in for surgery in probably February. And a candle of joy. Our dog spent, it's been a really bad week, 24 hours in the emergency room at the vet's. And so the joy is that she recovered from eating a whole 8 ounces of fresh ground espresso beans. She takes after me. And then a candle of joy for me because 2 days last week were spent with the capital C word. And it turns out it's not that. I still need surgery, but it's not that. So I'm very grateful and thank you.
My name is Marie-Claude. I would like to light a candle of concern for 2 friends who have lost their husbands recently.
I'd like you to Light a candle of concern. We have a friend who lost his infant son and would like and hope that he can get through this tough time.
Please light a candle. My name is Esther. Please light a candle of joy because of the party we had last night. It was a pasta party. From our silent auction, I had Terry Copeland and John Copeland's place, and I think there were in the 30s of us there, 33, I think.
Light a candle of concern and prayers and energy toward a friend of mine, Cheryl, who is diagnosed with breast cancer.
My name is Tom. Could you light a candle to celebrate the small group of us that turned out on the most recent Habitat for Humanity Work Day? We joined the future family owners who are building a house on a vacant lot on North 21st Street. And as a big surprise at lunch, we happened to meet Senator Herb Kohl.
And I will light one final candle for all the joys and concerns we choose to keep in our hearts today.
Who can retell the things that befell us? Who can count them? In every age, a hero or sage came to our aid. At this time of year, in days of yore, Maccabees the temple did restore. And today our people, as we dreamed, will arise, unite, and be redeemed. Who can retell the things that befell us? Who can count them? In every age, a hero or sage came to our aid.
For our reading today, we will have Robin and Fran sharing a Hanukkah story.
Every afternoon, I stayed with my grandfather for an hour or so after school, drinking tea and eating cookies until my mother could come from her work to take me home. That afternoon, I told my grandfather what our teacher said about Hanukkah and asked him if he knew the story about the war, too. He smiled and said that he did.
War is a time of darkness, Nashuna. The Hanukkah story is one of many stories about darkness and light that people have told each other at this time of year.
But why, Grandpa?
Winter is a time of darkness also, Nashuna. The lights start earlier and last longer. So in dark, people tell each other stories about the light to strengthen their hope. The story of the Maccabees is very old, but it's not the oldest story about darkness and light.
My teacher's menorah was made of clay, but my grandfather's was much larger and made of brass. He had brought it with him from Russia. He told me it had once belonged to his father and my great-grandfather. He took wooden matches and candles and laid them out on his library table. The candles my teacher had used were small and brilliantly colored, but my grandfather's candles were large and white. They will burn through the night until the sun rises, he told me. Handing me one of the candles to hold, he put a single candle into the menorah.
Tonight is the first night of Hanukkah, and so we will light one candle.
He took up his Bible and opened it to the first page.
The oldest story about darkness and light is the story beginning of the beginning of the world. And in the beginning, darkness was over the waters, and the Spirit of God moved in the darkness like a great wind over the face of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light."
I looked at my grandfather, his face shining with the power of these words. I was enthralled.
This is how the world begins, Neshumala. Life and all of its blessings begin with God's gift of light. Now, I will turn out the lamps, and there will be darkness like there was in the beginning. We will see what it is like to receive this gift.
At the time, I was afraid of the dark, and the thought of turning out the lights was not easy for me. Will you stay right here with me in the dark, Grandpa?
Of course, Neshumala, I will be here, and God will be with you, too. Tell me when you are ready to start.
When I nodded, my grandfather reached behind him and turned out both the lamps. The old study was a room without windows, lined floor to ceiling with books. It was very dark indeed. After a minute or so, my father struck a match. And lit the candle. And lit the center candle in the menorah. It did not give much light, and I could barely make out the menorah on the table. The rest of the room was filled with shadow. I held on to my candle tightly, pointing to the single candle in the menorah. He told me to light my candle. Then he took my candle from me and placed it in the menorah. I looked at the two candles burning together. I looked at the two candles burning together and felt a little better.
Tomorrow, we will light another one.
The next afternoon at sunset, we sat together in the darkness again. This time, my grandfather had placed two candles in the great candlestick. He lit my candle, and I carefully lit, and then we had two candles, for it was the second night of Hanukkah. We sat and watched the three of them burning for a long time. We did this every night for a week. As the days went by, I lit three and then four candles until on the final day, I lit all eight candles with my candle, and the room was filled with light. I sat back and looked at the menorah with all its candles burning. It was so beautiful that my heart ached and tears filled my eyes. It's beautiful, Grandpa.
Yes, but God's menorah is even more beautiful, Neshumala. God's menorah is made of people, not of candles. The story of Hanukkah says that God's light burns in the darkness even without oil, and it is so. That is one of the miracles of the light. But there is more. There is a place in everyone that can carry the light. God has made us this way. When God says, "Let there be light," he is speaking to us personally, Neshumala. He is telling us what is possible, how we might choose to live. But one candle does not do much in the darkness. God has not only given us the chance to carry the light, he has made it possible for us to kindle and strengthen the light in one another, passing the light along. This is the way that God's light will shine forever in the world.
After many years, I have found that often we discover the place in us that carries the light only after it has become dark. Sometimes it is only in the dark that we know the value of this place. But there is a place in everyone that can carry the light. This is true. My grandfather said so.
Thank you. Well, those that don't know, my name is Kelly Cole, and I'm honored to be here to present the sermon that Jane has prepared for us today. I'll begin by sharing some of Jane's background towards today's topic, and then we'll read a sermon by Bluestein Ortman. And I'd also like to note that we will not be doing a polylogue today. We invite you to share your thoughts and ideas at coffee hour. That'd be a good time for that. Jane's mother is Jewish. Her grandmother and her grandfather and her great-grandparents and their grandparents and grandparents long ago and far away from Russia and Romania and Lithuania were all Jewish. So Jane came to this earth with a great sense of pride in her Jewish heritage, with a great sense of belonging to this ancient tribe, with a great sense of importance of being Jewish, especially growing up in this predominantly Christian culture. But except for the yearly visits to her grandparents to celebrate the Jewish high holidays, and for the fact that her grandparents helped establish Temple Beth El in Madison, their names and the names of all of Jane's Jewish Madison relatives carved on bronze plaques and nailed to the walls of the temple, she knows very little of what it really means to be Jewish, or what the Jewish holidays mean, other than the explanations of them that can be found in any dictionary or encyclopedia or Wikipedia site. So why attempt a Hanukkah service this year? Well, it came about because last year one of the members of LCUUC came to Jane after a Christmas service and said, if we say that we draw from world religions, why do we only celebrate the Christian holidays during the church year? Jane's first and legitimate explanation was that this was her first year at LCUUC, and she didn't know what traditions were in place here for the holiday services, and so she went along with what had been always done. But in thinking about it further, Jane realized that she also went along with these Christian holidays because that is what she knew most about, and that it seemed forced or perhaps even a bit unreal to propose to present holidays she didn't know about herself to be a leader in these services when there were certainly others who knew more than her. But she did want to celebrate Jewish holidays this year, in addition to our regular Christian services, both now and in spring. And she came to realize that there were others who knew more than her from both sides of this congregation, inside this congregation and from outside of it, who she could draw from, which Jane has done, and they have been an immense help to her. Not the least of whom a UU minister Jane heard about for years, who had done a beautiful sermon specifically focused on Hanukkah. She read the sermon. Not only did Jane learn about Hanukkah in an entirely new way, a way that took away the dry history of it, but instead brought it to life. Words that made her think and look at herself and remind her of who she is and what she is called to do. But in addition to these words, the sermon is written in almost exactly the same way Jane would have written it, if she'd known enough about Hanukkah to write it. And so we present the sermon in part to you today in the same way Jane or any other minister would present to you readings from the Bible or from the Torah or from literature or philosophy or ancient texts. We present you the words of Hanukkah. We bring you a beautiful sermon that will enrich and bring reverence to this day of recognition to that other part of our faith tradition. The Shamus candle, A Sermon for Hanukkah by Reverend Charles Bluestein Ortman, written on December 5th of 1999. The Festival of Lights, also known as the Festival of Rededication, began at sundown this past Friday evening. Hanukkah celebrates the story of the Maccabean revolt led by Judas Maccabee over the Syrian king Antiochus IV. Excuse me. Many of us are familiar with this story in which, against all odds, the Jews drive the Syrians out of the great temple of Jerusalem. 8 days are required to render new lamp oil to be used in this rededication of the temple. Even though there is only one day's supply of precious oil, the lamp is lit. The miracle of the story, of course, is that one day supply lasts for full 8 days. It seems a great story to base a holiday on. Still, there is some amount of controversy that surrounds this holiday of Hanukkah. In the Jewish tradition, the Festival of Lights is considered to be only a minor holiday. But in this country, in competition with the blaze of Christmas, its celebration has reached major proportions. Is it an important holiday or not? There are other reasonable questions we might ask about the validity of a religious celebration of a military conquest. Why should we celebrate victory from violence, whoever the victor? And why would Unitarian Universalists want to acknowledge a festival founded on a mythological legend of a magical lamp that is unlikely to have historical validity? There is a very strong tradition of the oil that lasted for 8 days, but there isn't even a mention of it in either of the two books of Maccabee. And isn't the whole notion of God's chosen people just a bit much anyway? There may be a number of questions that could diminish the value of the Hanukkah message. To me, though, they make the meaning all the more human and so all the more real. Maybe the questions surrounding the celebration of Hanukkah or even greater value to the story offer even greater value to the story by providing us with lessons that can help us to live our lives more fully, more human, more fully real. There is no perfect past. That ours is a world of imperfections and incompletions is no less true today than it was in ancient times. If perfection is our test for value, it's one we can't pass. And so we look to traditions of old, however imperfect, in order to help find meaning in our own experiences. We don't look back so much to see how the gods might have handled themselves through difficult situations. We look to the actions, the symbols, that gave meaning to these actions, in order to learn how the people, our forebears, coped with their human experience. We can hope to learn from their mistakes as well as from their wisdom, to make meaning from what these figures symbolize. There is a particular element in the Hanukkah tradition that I find rather compelling, even though it's often overlooked in literature. The reason it might escape notice could be related to the character of this element. It's a sort of strong and quiet type of religious symbol. However major or minor the holiday of Hanukkah might be, I don't think there is any more worthy a symbol from any religious story than that of the Shamus candle. One each of the 8 candles, when the menorah is lit, the Shamus, the servant candle, is first. Then it's the Shamus candle that is used to light the other candles that represent the days of the miracle. The Shamus is a steadfast servant. After it's lit, it's picked up and held sideways. While its precious paraffin drips onto the table below, it brings its light to the others in waiting. It's the Shamus who stands tallest on some menorahs and shortest on others, but who stands night after night keeping vigil over the others, giving witness, lending strength, always a source and resource of light. And each night it is usually the Shamus that is the first to be consumed, having given all that it is to the greater glory of the brighter common light. Yet, as it spreads its light to the other candles, the Shamus becomes intricately connected with all that follows and with all that is. The Shamus becomes one with the light by sharing its light, however weakened or compromised that light might be. The Shaman is lit first. It doesn't wait to see if maybe some other candle might go first. It simply is first. It's first in illumination, first in service, first in accepting the role and the destiny of the menorah, first in promoting the greater good and the greater light that the menorah was created to bring about. The Shamus is an admirable archetype. It's not one we need to impose upon ourselves, though, like one more thing that we ought to be doing, but we're not. The shaman is a servant, not a master. It provides leadership through example, and it offers lessons through invitation. It invites us to deeper experience of connection through the act of giving of ourselves. When we give ourselves over to others and to principles, we become intricately connected to those people and those ideals. First we give, then we care. First we give, then we love. First we give, and in the giving, we establish the broader connections that provide the meaning that is the story of our life. It is in the act of giving we grow our souls and develop our purpose. Like the shamus, the servant candle, we need only reach out in service, reach out with our light to be the path to the deeper connections of caring and loving. Like the shamus candle, ours is always the opportunity to be first and act first. It is not as though opportunities for giving are difficult to come by. I'd imagine that the soft touch reputation that goes along with being a minister might mean that I'm approached a little more often than some folks. Still, I guess that most of you are approached as frequently or as nearly as I am. Sometimes it feels like there are so many opportunities for giving that we might drown in them. The truth is, we can't always give to everyone who asks. No one person or one household has enough time, energy, or resources to respond to every request with a contribution. That's not a good reason, though, to keep us from reaching out in service and from doing what we can. That's not a good reason for keeping us from establishing the connections that can make a difference in the lives of others and in our own life. That there is so much need in the world is not a good reason to shut down and despair and complain that we do and can do little to change things. We each have our light to shine. We each need to determine for ourselves how and where to share that light. We can't assume that we'll always know ahead of time just what opportunity might look like. We can't know ahead of time what opportunity might touch us deeply or might provide us with a transforming experience. There's another aspect of the shamus metaphor that calls for our attention, and this is perhaps the most important part of the Hanukkah message. It can be found in the question, from where does the shamus draw its light? How does the shamus get lit? Nazi Holocaust victim Hannah Sanesh wrote these words, "Blessed is the match consumed in the kindling flame. Blessed is the flame that burns in the heart's secret places. Blessed is the heart with strength to stop its beating for honor's sake. Blessed is the match consumed in kindling the flame." It's the blessed match that lights the shamus. The match is the servant to the servant. So what's the significance of the match, and from where does it draw its flame? A 14th century Hebrew moralist, Rabbi Yochavani Zariah, wrote, "The foundation of service is faith." If lighting the match is service, and indeed it is, what faith is the foundation of that service? That would be a question each of us would have to answer for ourselves. Faith in humanity? Faith in nature? Faith in the possibilities of goodness in the universe? Faith in God? Faith in the spirit of life? We don't light our own flames, this we know. We didn't bring ourselves into being. Life was simply given to us. Where does the match get its flame? Its flame is purely a gift of the universe that's called into being by the action of our striking it. From whence do we draw our faith? We draw it upon that which gives and sustains our lives, and we build it through the act of trusting that it's there for us, and that we are deserving of it. That's the religious message of the Hanukkah shining out through the light of the menorah to take faith and give service. First we give, then we care. First we give, then we love. First we give, and in giving we establish the broader connections that provide the very substance and the meaning that is the story of our life. It is in the act of giving that we grow our souls and develop our purpose. It is in the act of giving that we nurture our faith. There is a great deal of need in the world that calls out for our attention. To honor life is to allow life itself to shine through us and onto the world around us. Not so much because the world needs it, although it surely does. No, if we are going to make our lives all the more human and all the more real, if we are going to allow our lives to be full of life and light all the wonderful things we want them full of, we can't get there by trying to control the life forces as it moves through us. We can only get there by giving service to it. And that is what the shamus is there to remind us of. Yes, to take faith and to give service. May we aspire to be like the shamus candle, ready to be first to share out light through service, ready to be first to share our light through courage and determination, ready to be first to share our light through joy and thanksgiving, ready to be first to share our light through faith that lets us see beyond our own limitations to a world made more whole by the strength our connections have helped us form. Blessed is the match consumed in the kindling flame. This is the meaning of Hanukkah. This is the festival of lights. Shalom. Peace on earth. Amen. Please join us for our closing hymn, number 223, Stand As You Are Willing and Able. And for our closing words, As you prepare to leave this sacred place, pack away a piece of this church in your heart. Wrap it carefully like a precious gem. Carry it with you through the joys and sorrows of your days. Let its gentle glow strengthen you, warm you, remind you of all that is good and true, until you gather here again in this place of love. Thank you.